My pranams at our ever present Swami. Good morning to all of you, my Sai brothers and sisters. Sai Ram, it's lovely to see you all here. Especially after the wonderful bhajans that we just had. My memories as I sit in any bhajan, and especially one where there are so many people singing with such devotion to Swami, takes me back again. And I keep going back and forth again, as I said, to my childhood, to my adulthood. And I hope you will bear with my thoughts as it just randomly goes from one to the other. I just thought I would share, you know, the almost the last bhajan, Tripura Sundari Ma, one of the young girls, sang. As I was singing that bhajan, my thoughts went back to the many, many bhajans I have attended with Swami. Some of you may and some of you may not know that we all have the Akhand Bhajans, of course, in November every year. This Akhand Bhajan was started in 1945 by my grandfather. The reason being, in 1944, they started to do bhajans in the 8 families that first went to Swami in our home, in our family, my close relatives. And when they went to Puttaparthi, they used to sing songs in front of Swami, Meera bhajans, Tyagaraja's kritis, different songs. There were no bhajans per se. And Swami would actually sit with them in front of his own picture and sing too with them. And as I remember, as I was growing up, and this was much later in the 50s, when the first Prashanti Nilayam Mandir was built, that he would sit with us and we would all focus on the picture of Swami that was there in front of us. I mean, the reason being, Swami would be sitting there singing. And you know, we were all still children, and even our parents, they were adults, but they were children in this path of spirituality that Swami was training them to. We say that we must focus on the bhajans, we must understand the words, sing with devotion. These were all new things for my family, which was an orthodox spiritual family, but very much the ritualistic one, where you did your pujas, you did your festivals, and you went on with your life. And that was not enough, Swami said. You have to, when you do Namasmarana, focus on those words. But how to teach these people? That was probably Swami's dilemma. They come to me, but how to teach them? As a kindergarten teacher, I know when I have 15 children in a class, every child is different. And you have to approach that child in the way that that child is capable of understanding. So the method that he used then was, he would say, keep, just before we sat in the bhajan, he would say, keep looking at that picture when you sing. So we know that there's something is going to happen, you know, when he said that. And we would watch that picture. And as the bhajans were being sung, if it were a Devi bhajan, we would see kumkum appear on the forehead of Swami's picture. If it was a Shiva bhajan, we would sometimes see the garland detach itself from the picture and take the shape of a little snake over the picture. So we would be so focused on the bhajan, because we knew when the words came, something that was related to that word would happen on that picture. So that is how he taught us to understand the words, to understand and to focus on the bhajans. And this was as a child. So this would happen every day in Puttaparthi when they were there, but then they lived in Bangalore and the relatives and the family members had to come back to Bangalore, and they would miss Swami and they would miss those wonderful experiences of the bhajan that they used to do with him. So they decided to start bhajans in the 8 families that went to him every Thursday. So they started to do bhajans for an hour on Thursdays in the evenings. And as I said, in the 40s, there was a lot of curfew. They were not allowed to go because of the war that was going on. And somehow or the other, they would very quietly, even in the dark, take their flashlights and go and do their bhajans. And when this went on for almost a year, they all said, you know, we've done this bhajan every Thursday in our house, in our homes for almost a whole year. Why don't we have one day, a 24-hour bhajan, to culminate this, you know, this days of bhajans that we started. And my grandfather, who lived in Puttaparthi, they wrote a letter to him saying that, you know, we want to do this. Please ask Swami if this was okay to do this, to take his permission. So when they wrote that letter to my grandfather, who lived with Swami, he took care of Swami at that time, the reply they got was that Swami is very happy with this idea. He said to call it the Akhanda Bhajan, 24 hours of Namasmarana. Do it. And not only that, he wants to come too. So that is how the Akhand Bhajan started. So he came And he stayed in my aunt's house. And this happened till 1974. He would come even after the Vrindavan building was built. Every year our eight families would conduct the Akhand Bhajans. Even as I grew, I saw the crowds had grown. But it was still conducted by our eight families. We pooled whatever resources we had. Of course, we started to rent halls later. But Swami would come and stay. And at that time, the Bhajans would go on from Thursday morning to Friday morning. That's how we did it. Now, of course, Swami has changed it and it is over the weekend that we do. But till 1974, it happened like this. And in 1974, Swami said that these eight families have lit this particular lamp and now it should be lit all over the world. And then from 76 onwards, I think it became the global Akhand Bhajan, which is now so wonderfully done all over the world. Now, he would come and stay with us and he would arrive on Wednesday because the bhajan would start on Thursday morning. So he would arrive on Wednesday morning, sometime during the, midday in time for maybe lunch. And of course, you know, all the relatives would be at our house getting ready, you know, the room for Swami and all of those things. And at the same time, trying to organize an outside place where the actual bhajans could be conducted, because now there would be more than 100 or 200 people who would be attending the bhajan. And as soon as Swami came, I remember as a child, as soon as he came, he would come, he would have his lunch and he would say, where is the bhajan? Where is the bhajan hall? Where is the bhajan hall? And he would immediately want to go with us to see the bhajan hall, where all of this work, you know, getting the altar ready and everything was going on. I'm looking at this altar and I keep remembering, and every time I sit in a bhajan, I keep remembering our old Akhand bhajans. And he would come and there would be all the youngsters putting up the altar and decorating it. And there would be the women sitting and tying the flowers to make it into a beautiful garland to decorate the pictures. Just generally the hubbub of getting the whole place ready, swept and mopped. And here would Swami come and say, oh, that's very nice. And he would move his picture and start helping the youngsters put up. And he would say, what lamp are you lighting and this and that. And then, of course, everybody would sort of shoo him away. Because, you know, you can't really, if he's behind you, you can't really do what you're doing. They're all looking at him. Finally, my old aunt, who used to look after Swami when he was a small child, because she lived in Puttaparthi, she would say to him, and she would address him like he were a child, but her devotion to him was immense. She would say, Swami, will you come away and stop bothering those men who are trying to do the altar? And come and sit over here somewhere else quietly or something. So he would say, okay, then I will come and sit with you all where you're making the garland. And all the women would groan, oh no, not here, you know. Because he would come and there would be a big pile of jasmine flowers in the middle of these women. And there would be the women sitting there tying these garlands with so much devotion. One for Swami's picture, one for Swami, a full-length 4 feet garland to garland him after the aarti. And all this. And Swami would sit there and say, show me how to do this, show me how to do this. So he wanted to learn how to do. It's quite an art to make those garlands, I must say. It's not very easy, those of you who know. And he would want to do it. And they would show him once or twice and he would try to put the thread around it and the flowers would fall off. And he would keep complaining and we, the children would sit there and we would be laughing because he would be saying, you people don't teach me properly, you're hopeless teachers. Teach me properly. So they would be tying these garlands and he would try and it would fall off. And then they would say, look, you know what, you're not going to learn it, go. And my aunt would actually say, in this avatar, garland is not your thing, you know. Go away. Go do something else. So he'd say, no, but I want to learn it. I want to learn it. And then finally he would start with one or two flowers. And they would all get very upset with him because he would pull the thread and it would break the stems. So all the flowers are getting wasted. Here they are trying to manage this whole Akhand Bhajan in 200 rupees or whatever it was. And he's pulling all the flowers apart. They would say no, and then he would, they'd say, you're wasting all the flowers, and then my aunt would give him a little bowl filled with a few flowers, and she'd say, you could try with this, and if you can't do it, then you need to stop. So he would sit there with a steel bowl of flowers in front of him, and then suddenly he would turn around and see, and he would have the longest, most beautiful garland than everybody else. In a minute, there was a 3 feet garland, and see, I'm a quick learner. So this was the garland. And this was how he would participate with us. He became a part of us. When we come to a retreat like this, whether it is an Akhand Bhajan or a retreat, when we start helping with our friends in the serving or in the organizing, we become a part of that program. And that's what Swami said. If you just come and you're just a guest, you will remain that. But if you come and become a part of that family, start participating with them, you become one with them. And you enjoy their love as much as you enjoy the love of the person who has come into that home. We all talk about doing a lot of service. There is the Satya Sai Hospital, there is the school, and I look there when I go to Puttaparthi and I think Swami is doing all these wonderful things. But in my little way, I don't even do anything when I come back home to Washington DC. I go, I'm a family person, I'm a mother, I'm a wife. My duties are so much more at home. I go to school, I do a half a day. Swami has asked me from the very beginning not to work full time. So I do half a day's work and I come home and I am bound by the boundaries that he himself put on me. And I wonder, I cannot do these services, Swami. What can I do? And of course, Swami in his grace always tells me that when you do your service at home lovingly for your family, for the friends around you, for the people who know you, even if it is just to smile at them, that is enough service. So you don't have to feel that you have to leave your house and go and work for someone else for 3 hours. If that is what you can do and you have a lot of time, well, that is the thing you should be doing. But if it is not the thing for you just now, don't worry about it. So I have tried to do whatever I can. But all I know that I can share with you is that when we call out to him, he responds to us. That is the faith that I have. And that faith has not just come to me by reading something or hearing someone. I have experienced it. So this is the Swami I grew up seeing, the Swami that joked with us, played with us. He would tease this old lady so much. When we went to Puttaparthi, she couldn't see very well. She was old. And the lights would be off. You know, when the Prashanthi building was built, there was a generator and there were only 4 lights. And that was in Swami's building, in his bedroom and in the bathroom and in the dining room. And I think one on the stairway or something like that. And the rest of the place, there were only 8 rooms where South Prashanthi is now, which is where we all stayed. And there were no lights and we had to eat by light. We would actually put all our belongings into that small little room. And we ate outside the room on the sand where the eucalyptus trees are now. And we slept there. We would just roll out a mat and sleep there on the sand whenever we went to Puttaparthi. And the water that we had to wash the vessels and all that, we had to bring it from the well where you have the main gopuram. I don't know if you know, but there is a well right next to that main entrance there. And we had to draw the water. The men would draw the water and the women would stand in line and pass the water so that everybody would have enough water to wash their dishes. So it was so difficult that, especially for the children, the elders would just mix the rice and the sambar in one dish and we would all sit in a circle and each of us was given a little blob in our hand, you know, and you ate it in your hand and the only dish that you had to wash was your own hands at the end of the meal. So they wouldn't have so many plates to wash. So this was the method they used. So we would all sit in a circle. And this old lady, her name is Savitrama, she would sit in the middle and we would all sit around her. And it would be pitch dark in the night and she would sit there with a lantern and feed us. And Swami would suddenly, he would have had his dinner because we were fed after his dinner. And Swami would come out quietly from behind the buildings and sit with us, you know, amidst the girls, you know, we were all very young and he would cover the, you know, our long skirt that we wore. He would just cover himself and have a little scarf over his head because his hair would give him away, you know. So he would have a scarf and he would hide and this poor lady couldn't see very well. So he would put his hand out with the children and he would get fed too in the circle. You know, she wouldn't know. She would be busily dishing out the food and we would all be giggling. Because he would say, don't tell her, don't tell her, don't tell her. And he would be eating. And at the end of the meal, he would say, Savitrama, you prepare better food for the grandchildren. What you sent me today for dinner was not as good. And she would get so upset and she would say, my goodness, Swami, why did you eat this? This was morning rice. I had sent you fresh food in the evening. This was all food that was left over here. They put some leftover for the kids. Who knows what they did. Why did you eat this? How did you hide from me? How did you? And he would take off his scarf and show, because she could see his hair, you know, but her eyes were not good enough. And he would, actually, I have a photo at home where he's got this scarf tied around his head. with his hair all flattened. But so we thought this was the Swami who was just there, you know, to play with us and tease all the elders and just generally have fun. And that was the Swami I grew up with as a child. And then suddenly this Vibhuti thing happened. And that was when it started me thinking. And ever since then, I know that he will respond to us however, whatever the difficulty we are in, as long as our hearts are filled with devotion. One thing that he did for me, and you know, Swami keeps saying many times in his discourse, I'm always with you, believe that, believe that, believe that. And you, as well as me, I'm sure we all forget that at times. When I came to the US in 88, we had no intention of coming here. Swami had got me married in Vrindavan in 1978, and you know, as many marriages in India, was arranged by Swami. I had no idea that this would happen. Just to sort of diverge a little bit here, I'll tell you how, because one of the young girls asked me, how did Swami get you married? So since I'm on the track, maybe I'll tell you that. When I was studying in college, I finished my early childhood education, and I wanted to do a master's program. And when I asked Swami that I brought in the application, Swami, I want to send it in, he just joked and said, no MSc, MRS, he said, Mrs., you know. So then he told me to do a Montessori program, and I was doing that, and I didn't join the master's program. And as is in many families in India, you know, I had just finished my BS, and many family friends and relatives would suggest many alliances to my parents to get me married off, so to speak. And Swami was all the time asking my parents, when are you going to get Geeta married? And so, you know, they would find out. And I always said that I didn't want to marry anyone unless they were a Sai devotee, because I couldn't imagine my life starting off a new married life with a person that I would have to convince and explain about Swami. So I said that I only wanted to marry a devotee. And as even in those days, even in the 70s, there were not as many devotees as there are now. And my parents would always say that, you know, that might be a difficult thing. And they would always give me this thing about, you know, as long as he's a good man, and you should just, you know, you Swami will take care of you. And I was very stubborn. And one day when Swami had come to our house, he asked me the same question. Why are you saying no to whoever they suggest to you? And I said, I only want to marry a Swami devotee, Swami. Otherwise, I'm fine. You know, I will be the way I am. Swami said, well then, okay. What if I tell you to marry a lame man or a blind man? What would you do then? And I said, that would be fine as long as he is a Sai devotee. If he told me to marry him, and I would assume that you have my best interest at heart, you know, and I would do it. So then he said, okay, since you said that, then I will promise you that I will get you married only to a Sai devotee. So then I said, well, I have one more condition, that I want to be only in Bangalore where I can do, you know, when he's in a good mood, why not, you know. Put in a few things. Then I said, he said, all right, and that conversation ended. And suddenly in 78, we went to Dasara celebrations in Puttaparthi, and I came back from Puttaparthi. And there was a letter from my aunt who lived in Delhi. This was my dad's sister. And they, over a period of time, had tried to suggest many people and had given up, you know, on my case. But this time she wrote and said, we know of a family here in Delhi who are Sai devotees, and their son is in Bangalore. So they are Sai devotees, and since this is what Geeta is always talking about, if you want, I will find out more about the family and the boy and whatnot. So Swami was in Bangalore, so my father very sternly said, well, you know, here's this letter, and I'm going to ask Swami about this. So we went to Whitefield that day, it was Thursday, and my father in the car said, I'm going to ask Swami about this, and so is it okay with you? So I told my father, look, you know, you go into the Vrindavan building, because, you know, he would go in and he would take care of Swami, and he would be, and we were always outside. Unless Swami called the women in, we had to be outside. So I said, since I'm the person who's getting married, I think he should be telling me and not you. So, you know, you will, and my father is not a very good, you know, he's not very good at coming and conveying it very well. He'll come and say, well, he said everything is fine or something like that. And he would never say all the details. And I'm sure many women have this complaint about the men that they are married to. You know, so you spoke for 25 minutes to your mother and she said one sentence, which is what I say to my husband. So this is how my father is too. So I said, you know, that won't do. So my father got actually very angry with me in the car, and he said, you're turning out to be a real brat. Swami has no time to come and sit and discuss all of this with you. There are hundreds of people waiting in the darshan line to see him. And secondly, marriage isn't an issue that he will come and discuss with the youngster, with the person who is supposed to. He will discuss this issue with the parents, you know, traditionally, not with the girl who is going to get married. So he doesn't have time to come and listen to all this. So I got even more angry and I said, well, you know, how Swami manages his time is not my problem, really. You know, he's God. He should know how to manage it better. But this is my problem. I'm very limited. He's not. So my father got very, very angry. And we arrived in Vrindavan, you know, in a very bad mood. And my mother, being traditional and superstitious, says, you guys are starting this whole thing off on such a negative note, it's never going to happen. So we all arrive. And as my mother said, as we come to Vrindavan, it is pouring cats and dogs. And the Sevadal people tell us that Swami has cancelled darshan. So my father, of course, happily can go inside. So he was getting ready to park the car and go into the building. When suddenly we see the gates open, my mother and I are standing under some tree because it was raining. And Swami's car comes out and Swami decided to give darshan in the car because there were so many people waiting, he didn't want to disappoint them. So he comes in the car and stops under the Sai Ramesh. If those of you who had seen the old Vrindavan will know that the tree, you know, they had a little shelter under the tree. So Swami got out there and called us across. You know, we were standing at the other tree, my father, my mother and I, and he called us. And we went. And as soon as we went close by, I can never forget the scene, he caught hold of my ear, you know, like I was a little child, and said, how I manage my own time is my business. I'm God, I should learn better. He repeated the whole conversation that had occurred in the car. And then, even before my father could open his mouth, he said, I know the letter came from Sunanda, your sister. You go back now to Bangalore, back home. You call the boy's parents and ask them to come. They're in Delhi. Ask them to come on Monday and I'll settle the marriage on Monday. So my father says, but Swami, I don't know these people. I don't know who they are. She still has to find out. So Swami said, you don't know who they are, but I know who they are. You just go and call them. So my poor father thinks that he's had to do. We come back to Bangalore and he calls his sister and says, you know, this is what Swami said. And all the way back home, you know, I get a lot of scolding. He says, all because of your stubbornness. Look at this stuff. I don't even know who this person is. I'm going to call him up. Swami asks me and says, Swami said your son is supposed to marry my daughter. Who's going to believe me? Who's going to believe me? So, and we know they're Sai devotees, but we don't know whether, how long they've been Sai devotees, whether this is an acceptable thing for them. So I'm laughing because I think, well, you know, this isn't going to happen. They're going to say no and I'm happy and I'm going to stay this way. So he calls my aunt and she is shocked. She says, I just know these people as acquaintances in the bhajan. I just can't call them and say, Swami said to marry my niece, you know. How am I going? So my father said, well, you call them and tell them whatever little you can and then I'll call them after that. So he calls them finally and they are totally flabbergasted. They have never seen, I mean, they've seen Swami and had darshan, but they had never once spoken to Swami. They had never had any interview in their life. They were devotees who came to the bhajans, who had come to know about Swami by reading books and attending the bhajans, and they were devotees. My husband's father, his name is Dr. Murthy, he said, well, that's all very nice, but you know, our son lives in Bangalore, he works there, we have to ask him. So my father said, well, he said, we'll call him and call you back maybe in an hour's time. So then they call us back and they were even more shocked because when they called and asked him, he said, well, if that's what Swami said, I'll marry her. I think they were more shocked by that than what Swami had said. So they said, okay, then my father said, Swami has asked you to come here on Monday to see you all. So they said, we will try and take a flight on Sunday. Now in this whole big mess that has happened, Friday we go back in the morning for darshan and Swami immediately comes to my mother and says, so did you contact them? What did they say? So my mother said, they said they will come on Sunday, Swami, we talk to them. But my mother said, we have a problem. There is a Balavikas Refreshers camp in Mangalore, which is about 200 miles from Bangalore, and I was one of the speakers there. And we had to go in an overnight bus for the Refresher camp, do that, and we were all supposed to come back that Monday morning. So, I have to go there. I won't even be here when these people come. So Swami was very sweet. He said, you go. And you know, this is the mother that I was talking about yesterday. My mother wasn't worried. She was worried about her refresher camp. And now what is she going to do? And Swami said, you go, but you give Gita's topic to someone else, to one of the other teachers. Let Gita stay back. And the nice explanation he had for cancelling my talk was, he said, you go, but if she comes in the overnight bus and all that, she'll look very tired when the boy sees her on Monday morning. So he was protecting my looks and everything, what can I say? So all this happens, and Monday, these people, they arrive from Delhi, they come in a taxi to Vrindavan. We don't know how they look, they don't know how we look, we've never met them. My father has left a message with the Sevadal people saying that if he says he's Dr. Venus Murthy, send him over to the interview room kind of thing. Then we all go, and as soon as they arrive, we gather in front of the interview room. And Swami calls us in, and he's all-knowing. That is the point of all of this, because I don't know how many of you are truly interested to know all these details about my marriage. But the point that I really was trying to make was, my in-laws had never ever spoken to Swami at all. They had become devotees in the early 70s. They had attended bhajans. My mother-in-law is a very good singer, so she liked music, and that's how they got into it. And my husband had never spoken to Swami. And as soon as they walked in, Swami introduced them to my father. And he narrated everything that my father-in-law had ever done in his profession till that day. Where he had worked, how many years he had worked as a professor in IIT, how many years he had started his company, everything. And my father-in-law, an intellectual man with a PhD and all, just stood there with his jaws just dropped when Swami was just narrating everything, which village he was born, everything. And then he introduced my father, of course, whom has spent all his life with Swami, to them, and said, you know, Padmanabh came to me when he was a young man. I gave Geeta her name, and she's like my daughter, and I brought her up. And he gave all this beautiful introduction, played the mediator between the two families. And then he asked them and said, you know, the elders, are you all willing for this marriage? If so, I will. We will talk about it. And he said all this, left that sentence there, and called me. And took me for a little walk down that path that there is in Thrai Vrindavan, and said, you come with me. And I went, and I cannot forget the loving conversation we had, you know, that day. He said, look, I know you've said that you've always wanted to marry a Sai devotee. I know you've said that you will marry whoever I tell you to marry. But now is the time for you to tell me if you don't want to do it. If you don't want to marry him, tell me now. You don't have to go back and tell the elders that you won't do it, because I know they will get very upset because I have suggested this. You tell me, and I will go back and tell them I changed my mind if you don't want to do it. But this is the time, because once we go back there and you say yes, then there's no going back on that once you give your word. But this is the time. And I still kept saying my mantra, I'll do whatever you say, Swami. I'll do whatever you say, Swami. And then he told me a very beautiful thing. He said, you know, when we look at other people, we only see their outside of that person. We see their mannerisms, we see their clothes, we see the way they speak. But we cannot see what is inside them. But I can see what is inside that person. And I can tell you that he's a very God-fearing and God-loving person. But anyway, we came back and he fixed our wedding, and we got married after. He said he was going back for his birthday celebration in Parthi, and that he would come back and conduct the wedding in December. So that is how, when we decide to follow the path and we really have that faith in him, he will take care of us in every little way that he possibly can. So finally, remember the condition, I said I wanted to be in Bangalore. And so I got married, and I was in Bangalore for 10 years. I had my children in Bangalore. They were born there. Swami gave them their names and everything. And then suddenly, out of the blue, when you're all very nice and comfortable, Swami will throw a little bombshell at you. And, you know, when you want to put Swami's picture and you hammer a nail or something into the wall, before you put the picture, you shake it first to see whether it is strong enough to hold that picture. And you shake it, and that's what Swami does. Once in a while, he'll shake that faith, you know, to see if you're strong enough to take the test that he's going to throw your way. He's going to throw a test. And the tests have to come. And once when I asked him, how many tests, Swami? He said, well, if you have to keep passing and going forward, you have to keep facing those tests. Otherwise, you'll be in the same first standard all the time. If you want to go second standard, third standard college, you have to have the test. There's no way out of it. So that was my test. In 1988, he suddenly called us one day and said, you resign your job and go to the United States, to my husband. We were settled, we were doing Swami's work, I was an EHV, Balavika's person there, my husband was the center president. We were doing as much as we could for Swami with two young children in the house. And out of the blue, he And I was just so shocked, and I kept saying, "No, Swami, this is it. Swami, you promised me." He said, "I promised you when you get married, you will be in Bangalore. Now 10 years are over." So my husband arrived, but he was very sweet, you know. He sort of pampers our ego also. I said, "I don't want to go and stay in somebody's house with no job." My husband's brother lives in California. So Swami was very sweet. He said, "Let Mohan go, and then after 3 months, you go." So my husband came, and the all-knowing is what seems to be coming, so I'll keep going on there. He came, and he found a job. He was in California, but he got a job on the East Coast in Gaithersburg. He called me and said that there are 2 or 3 offers for jobs. There's one in Gaithersburg, and you asked Swami if that's the one I should take. Now, when I was speaking to him on the phone, the connection wasn't very good, and I heard it as Gettysburg. So I went to Vrindavan, and I stood there, and from Swami comes to me in the darshan and says, "What? Mohan got a job?" he asked me. I said, "Yes, Swami." He said, "It is in Gettysburg." And Swami laughed and said, "No, no, not Gettysburg. That is 100 miles away from where he got the job. Go and ask him." So I come back and I call my husband, and he said, "I didn't say Gettysburg, I said Gaithersburg." So I went back again in the afternoon. I said, "See, Gettysburg is where Abraham Lincoln spoke. That's not where he got the job." So taught me a little bit of US history there, and said, "Ask him to take the job." And then, so I took the job. So now comes the real thing, right? I have to leave now. It's time for me to go. And he said, "You know, you are leaving on this day, so come the previous day, and I won't leave for Puttaparthi. After I speak to you, I'll go." So he stayed actually till the day I left, and left the following day, sweet mother that he is. But he called me in for an interview, and there he said some of the most wonderful things to me, and I was just crying and crying and crying, and I said, "I don't want to go. Why are you sending me away from you?" It seemed as though he was giving me a punishment for a mistake that I didn't know I had made. I didn't know what I had done to deserve this punishment, to be thrown away so far away from him, not to be able to see him, not to run to him for my silly problems. And he said that, "You have seen me as a child, only this little form. And you have only seen the Swami, and you love the Swami. That is wonderful. That was the blessing and the grace you got. But you have to see my glory in other places. You have to see me with what devotion and dedication other people do their work when they hear my name. How are you going to enjoy that glory if you are here all the time under my shadow? When a child grows up, the child has to leave the mother and go out and prove to the mother that whatever she has taught, the child has learned. If you are always with the mother, how will the mother ever know? And now that I have sent my 2 sons away to college, and I hear them call back and tell me, 'Mom, you know, we actually ate salad today.'" Says, "Wow, not bad. All my life I've been trying to teach them good eating habits, and finally when they go to the cafeteria in college and they have nobody to police them, they actually eat salad." I know it might sound silly, but that's what Swami said to me. If you're always with the mother, how will the mother know that you have learned the lessons that she has taught? You have to go. It's time for you to go. But you will see me there in a different way. And I can tell you, my brothers and sisters, I have seen him more in all of you. Just because I know that you have not had the fortune that I have had, maybe in physical terms. You have come to him when you have become adults. You have come to him with shaky faith, maybe, by reading books into others, but you have been able to conquer all those doubts, to sit here for 3 days and spend your precious time talking about him and hearing it about him, and your devotion is far greater because you have done it without that physical proximity that I was so fortunate to have. And that's what he wanted me to see, I guess. So he sent me away. And then he said a beautiful sentence. He said, "You're not really going far away. You know, when the mother takes the child to the market and there are a lot of people milling around the child, the mother holds on tightly to the child's hand because she doesn't want the child to get lost. So the mother holds even more tightly when you're far away, away from home, in a strange place." So, with great tears and not really the faith that I could do all of that he asked me to do, I left Bangalore. My aunt, the lady who got the vibhuti in the telephone, used to tell us, Swami, and I haven't been fortunate to see that, maybe only once. In the old days, Swami used to take all the old devotees to the Chitra with me in the afternoons, and I used to go too as a child. But sometimes when he would take them, they would climb up to that up the hill to that Kalpavriksha tree. And Swami would get them things out of that tree that you couldn't imagine, with sweets and fruit and whatever it was. And when you went up to the tree, and I have, and I don't know now because I haven't gone there for many, many years now, but I remember as children when we used to climb up there, there would be a big crevice that you had to jump over to get to the tree. And Swami would go, and all the old people would follow him very slowly, and then the younger people would try as fast as possible to catch up with him. And then Swami would reach that big opening in the hill, and he would jump across, stand on the other side, and very patiently hold out his hand to make every person jump across. The women, he would take the children from the women and then help them across. And my aunt would always say, Swami, this crevice you are easily making us cross. Make us cross the Bhavasagara, this worldly ocean, in the same way, she would say. So this is the Swami, you know, this crevice you will make us easily cross. That is very easy for you. But make us cross this ocean of life. That is more difficult. But if we keep these little wants and desires low, I'm sure it will be easy for him to do that also. So this is the Swami. He will keep his word no matter what. If he says he's going to be there to help with the suitcases, he's going to be there. You know, Swami has been very busy doing this kind of stuff for my family. We're quite bad at learning, I assume. Because my father, who has spent all his life with Swami, had a very similar experience in 1970 when he came to the U.S. Swami had asked him to come to the U.S. and meet with some of the professors that my brother would be coming to college to. My brother came and studied here in Philadelphia. And Swami sent him 2 years ahead of time and told him, go and meet this professor and this professor, because they will be the people who will be teaching Jagadish, who is my brother. So my father had come, and Swami had asked him to visit two old devotees in Holland, two Dutch ladies who were very old and were devotees of Swami. And Swami had sent a letter for them with my father. So my father had to break journey and see them and come. And the flight that he had to take, the interconnecting flight within Holland, he missed the flight because his previous flight, the flight from India, came in late. And he was wondering what to do, because he knew that these two ladies would have driven to the airport, and they're pretty elderly. So he was wondering what to do, and he was talking to them in the airport when they suggested that he take a taxi to the next place. It was only about some 80 kilometers, and they said you could probably make it to your flight if you drive. So he got into the car and drove to the next place so that he could get the connecting flight. And when he got off there, he met a person dressed in the uniform of a pilot. And he came and said, are you Dr. Padmanabhan? Come on, come on, we are waiting for you. Some gentleman. And he just took my father's suitcase, put him on the flight. They didn't even look at his tickets, and he got on the flight. And in the hurry, my father went into the airplane, didn't even turn around to say anything because he was so stressed out by the whole thing, and he left. And when my father came back to Bangalore after his whole visit, Swami said, you even forgot to say thank you to me. So this is the Swami, you know. When we do Swami's work, he is always besides you, taking care of you. That is the key. When we want to do Swami's work, whether it is your service activity, whether it is anything, whether it is your Balavikas work, your SSC work, he is always, if you have ever felt, oh, how can I take on all of this work that the center is asking me, can I do it? Please never doubt, because Swami will somehow give you the strength to do it. And he will take care of your other things while you take care of his work. That is the way I look at it. I'll tell you an incident that happened to me where work is concerned. Somebody asked me this question, which is why I want to tell you this. Somebody said, oh, it must have been so very wonderful to have Swami like that with you all the time. Of course it was wonderful, but you don't realize that when you're young, though. It was wonderful, but when I was young, I thought it was a big pain, because I got caught whatever I did, you know. I mean, there was no escape. I could fool my parents if I wanted to, but I couldn't fool him. And it was a very difficult childhood in that sense, because all of my friends would do all sorts of things, and as human beings we are tempted to do it, but you know you want to do it, but you know you're going to get caught, so there's no fun in it. When I was 15 years old, when Swami decided to start this whole SSC thing, I was just in 9th grade, I think. I wasn't even 15. He came to our house and he asked my mother to take over the SSC program in the whole state of Karnataka to become the coordinator. And she said, they had just started at that time what they called Balavihara, and Swami had said, gather the children in your neighborhood, teach them bhajans, tell them stories. That was the beginning of the Balavikas. So she had started to do that, had a few children, including me and my friends in the class. And we had all started to do the Balavikas when Swami attend classes in a very informal fashion when Swami wanted to make it happen all over the state. So he asked her to become the coordinator. So she said, Swami, I have about 15, 20 children in the class. Who is going to teach them? Because there were no teachers at that time. Everybody was just Sai devotees coming and sitting and having darshan and going. So Swami said, here she is, and pointed to me. And I was in 9th grade. And I said, me? He said, yes. I said, but the people who attend the Balavikas classes are my friends. They are not going to listen to me if I sit there and start telling them stories. He said, no. You start doing the Balavikas classes yourself. So suddenly from being a student at age 15, I became this guru in the Balavikas. And outside I would play and chat with all of these people, but inside the class, Swami said, if you dress appropriately and come and sit in the class, they will respect you as a teacher. So suddenly I had to learn how to wear a sari and sit in the class and all that. Anyway, I did that and I had done this for a few years. I entered college when Swami started the EHV program. And in that EHV program, he selected a few teachers who had had some experience to start going out to the general schools, where the teachers who were not devotees, who teach in the schools, would start getting some EHV training so that they could start that in their school. So there were about 9 or 10 people, elderly people, who were teachers by profession, who had been given this job. And Swami suddenly asked the lady who was coordinating this, a lady called Kalyani Sundaram, says, where is Padmanabh's daughter? So she said, Swami, she's only 17, 18 years old, you know, and the people you're going to go and train are non-devotees, who are school teachers, who are older than her. So I haven't chosen her for the EHV program, even though I had been doing Balavikas for a while now. So he said, no, when they see that young people are doing this, the older people get motivated. So you take her. So this lady comes home and she calls me and said, from tomorrow onwards, Swami said that you have to be in the EHV training. And I put up the biggest fight of my life. I'm not going to go to any EHV program. This meant traveling all over Karnataka with this group of 9 teachers, training unknown people, non-devotee teachers. And I had to go with these elderly women everywhere. You know, that was my problem. Who were all teachers. So I told my mother, I'm not doing this EHV. Why Swami is asking me to do all this EHV and all? So my mother told Swami that she says, yeah. So she doesn't want to do Swami. So he said, tell her, that won't work. She just has to go. All my life, this is how he is. And then, so I became this EHV person. And I started to go and do the training. But anyway, it wasn't too difficult because they would give me a topic. So I would prepare. And whenever it was in Bangalore City, I would go and do the training and give the talks and come. Sometimes I had to go out of station. And that would happen only when my college was closed because I couldn't skip school. And then one day, there was a training program in a place called Tumkur, which is about 60, 40, 50 kilometers from Bangalore. So the training program was there. It was Monday through Friday, and it was during the Dasara vacation. So I couldn't get out of it because I had no college. So, and the one thing that Swami told this lady, the coordinator, Kalyani Sundaram, he said, Geeta is young. When you go out of town and all that, make sure you take her with you. Let her not travel alone. So this became a major problem. Wherever I went, these people took it so seriously. They wouldn't even let me go to the restroom. They would take me there to the restroom. Because I said, Swami will scold us. He said to accompany you wherever you went, so we are coming with you. So wherever I went, I had these 2 women following me wherever I went. And if I wanted to read a book or something in the bus, I had to make sure it was Satya Sai Speaks or something. Because there were these teachers. So they followed me everywhere, and I would come home and grumble to my mother. I used to just grumble so much. Anyway, I had to go to Tumkur. So the Kalyani auntie called me the previous day and said, make sure you're at the bus station at 7 o'clock in the morning, because the program begins at 10 o'clock or whatever, and it takes 1.5 hours to get there. And my talk was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I said, Kalyani auntie, why don't you all go? Because I'll just take the 11 o'clock bus over. She said, no, you are coming with us. You know what Swami said. So first day, Monday, I went with them. And I sat and sat while all the lectures happened. And then my turn was at 2 o'clock, and then I had to give my talk. Now on Tuesday, the second day, I knew where the place was. It was in a junior college in Tumkur. I knew how to get there and I was pretty confident. So second day, I came up with this idea. Forgot this omnipresent Lord that he was omnipresent. So what I did, I left the house very obediently at 7:30. I told my mother bye, you know, very nicely went, but I didn't go to the bus station. I went to my friend's house. I knew these people had to take the 8 o'clock bus because their lectures were there at 10. They couldn't skip and you know how upset Swami gets if we are not on time. So they had to take that bus, so I knew they couldn't keep waiting for me. So I went to my friend's house and my friend said, what are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be going to Tumkur? And I said, yeah, but you know my lecture is only at 2 o'clock so I can just spend some time with you. So I happily chatted with her, drank coffee, had breakfast in the house and you know made a whole bunch of remarks on these women who followed me everywhere. You know, they're such a pain and they keep coming with me and all they do is keep talking about their husband and children and it's just so boring. So anyway, I said all this to my friend and then I went to the bus station. You know, I'm setting myself up so nicely. Swami must be just laughing every time he sees me. Here she is again. So at 11 o'clock, I go to the bus stand, buy my ticket and those people in the meantime have frantically called my mother and all that and I have no idea about all this. I take the 11 o'clock bus, get into the bus. Now the first thought that it may not go as smoothly as I thought starts because I get into the bus and I'm the only woman in the bus. It is filled with men and they're all men from the villages and they're all looking at me because even then, you know, in mid-70s, girls in India didn't go about in the bus, especially on the village buses by themselves. So I get in and they're all looking. And I says, well, you know, there's a whole bus full of people. What can they do? So I sit there. And nobody sit next to me in the bus. So I'm sitting there occupying one seat and then the bus starts and we go about maybe 10 kilometers then we hear all kinds of weird sounds and the bus stops. So we all have to get up. And now of course the second thought, you know, there's something going on here. And I'm looking at my watch and then I say, well, it's still, I've given myself 45 minutes margin. And the bus driver tells me they can fix it. So I'm still all right. Come down. But then when I get down, there are a few old men in the bus who look at me and say, you know, what kind of family do you come from? Your parents are sending you alone like this in a village bus? And my poor parents. And I say, no, I had some work. He says, why are they sending young women these days in the bus? And you know, these old elderly gentlemen sort of start saying, you know, look at what the world has come to and all this stuff. And I'm standing there feeling very embarrassed with the whole thing. And then of course the bus starts after this. I look at the watch. Oh, okay, you know, I'm fine. Swami is not really testing me because I didn't really do anything wrong. You know, I'm getting there. And get in the bus. So the bus goes, you travel, I come. It stops right in front of the junior college where the program is. That is a boys' college. So I go there to the venue where it is in some hall that we had the program yesterday. I've been there. I go there and they're all painting the whole place. There's nobody there. I say, where's the program? And they all look and say, what program? The one that happened yesterday was supposed to be here the whole week. And there are a few people, they say, no, we are painting the building today. So they've all moved to another building at the other end of town. And then I come out and now I'm really scared. I don't know how to get there. And in the meantime, it's a boys' college and they're all whistling and calling out name. And I'm getting shakier and shakier as I come out, you know. They, and some of them saying, oh, who are you? And all, and inviting me to lunch and whatnot, you know. I'm getting really scared now because this is not something that I normally did, right? So I come and by this time I'm getting ready to... And I start asking, where is the place, where is the place? Because my lecture is at 2 o'clock and it's almost like 1:15 or something. And they said, they give me some name. And then the guy who's painting says, I can take you there if you want and stuff. So I start to cry and now I know, you know, that this is Swami is shaking that nail there. And I am petrified. I have disobeyed him. I may not have in my mind called it a lie, but I have deceived my parents. I deceived the women who waited for me at the bus stop. I mean, these are like major crimes in Swami's book. And here I am and I don't know how to get to the venue and I'm going to miss my talk. I'm going to be hauled over the red hot coals is what I'm thinking. I'm crying by this time. I come out of the gate and at this time, you know, that is when, you know, when in Kannada they say, Sankata Bandare Venkata Ramana. When you're in trouble, you will call out to Venkata Ramana. Saying, Sairam, please help me, Swami. I will never do. I will go with the most boring women again in my life. I'll never do this again. Help me. And I come out and I stand there and a car passes me by. It goes a few feet, stops and backs up. And the window comes down and who should be sitting in the car is Swami's sister, Venkamma. She looks and says, aren't you Padmanabh's daughter, Geeta? She asks me. I say, yes, because she has seen me since I was a baby. So she says, what are you doing here standing in front of this boys' college all by yourself? All by yourself. So I said, well, I came for the EHV course. She said, get in. And I got into the car. Her son-in-law was driving. And she says, I came to the EHV program, auntie, and the venue has been shifted. She says, what is this, Swami? He's making all these young girls go like this for EHV programs and all that with nobody to chaperone them. And says, I must talk to him, she says. And of course, I'm not telling her that I missed the bus or anything. She says, why didn't you go with Kalyani, auntie, and everyone? I said, I missed the bus. One more lie, you know. Missed the bus. And she said, oh, okay. All right, she said, you know, we will drop you there, wherever the venue is. Where is the place? Her son-in-law goes and finds out. And then they start. And then I ask her in the car, auntie, what are you doing here? She says, we are on our way to Shimoga, which is quite further away, another 4 hours drive. And I suddenly developed a really bad headache. So we came into Tumkur city to buy some medication for my headache. That's why we drove here and we saw you standing here. So they're very sweet. They took me, got me some orange juice and then dropped me off at the venue. And I said, thank you, thank you. And of course, by that time, poor frantic Kalyani auntie, she's looking at the clock. It's almost 2 o'clock. Where is Geeta? Where is Geeta? Who's going to talk? I arrived and she said, oh, you came finally. Come, come. And there's about like 5 minutes and then I go up and I do my talk and I don't tell them. She said, what happened to you? What happened to you? And I said, I missed the bus, auntie, and this and that. She said, okay, no, next time, come on time. You know, we were all so worried and we are so afraid because Swami has said that you should always come with us. I said, fine. And then we came back. I came home. Swami is in Puttaparthi. So why volunteer this information to my parents? I didn't tell them. So I came and I said, everything went off very nicely. I missed the bus, but you know, Venkama auntie came there and dropped, you know, simplified the whole thing. Came there and she gave me a ride to the place and everything went on. Oh, my mother said, that's very nice. I'm glad you got help. And that was it. 4 months later, after birthday celebration, Swami comes back to the Bangalore and usually whenever he came, we had to all give him a report of the EHV thing. So Kalyani auntie and all the 10 teachers sat there with her and Swami came in the darshan line and asked her, how did the program go? And she said, we did so many programs, it all went up well, and gave him the report. And he came to each teacher and started to give Padnamskar. And I'm kind of the last person, but I am not worried. 4 months have gone by, after all. And Swami comes to me and stands there and says, you want to want me to tell these women how you missed that bus? No, Swami, no, Swami, please, Swami. You want me to tell them what you thought about them and why you didn't go with them? He says, no, Swami, please, you know, they actually think I'm a good girl. You don't want to disillusion them, you know. No, Swami, please, Swami, I won't do it again, I won't do it again. He says, when I tell you something, obey without questions. There is a reason when I tell you something. And he said, and then the tone changed, you know, from the father to the mother. He says, you know, and not even a mother, really, a friend. Just because of you, I had to give that poor Venkamma such a bad headache. Walked away. He was so sweet. He never told my mother. He never told his teachers. But I was so scared that he would at some point that I told them myself. But that's the wonderful Swami. He can be a friend, he can be a mother, he can be a father, he can be anything that you want him to be. It's all in your own heart and in your mind. And of course, Venkamma never, never forgave me for that. Till the day she died, she would say, because of you, I had to get a headache. You know? But it was difficult to have him there all the time. A little bit difficult. But after all, what is that difficulty compared to all the love that I have received? I would be very, very ungrateful if I said that I haven't enjoyed it. But it's only as I've grown older that I have valued it more, I can say. Only because when you're a child, you take things for granted. You think that parents are there to do everything for you. That's their job. But then you realize that as you grow older, even with your own parents, how much they do. When we become parents ourselves, we realize actually the value of our own parents who have done so much for us. And Swami, I am not a scholarly person to give you any great lessons that I've learned. I've learned very, very simple lessons. And even those I find difficult to follow sometimes. To coming back to parents, I mean, we are all so fortunate to have the wonderful parents that we have. For me, I am so fortunate that I've had parents who showed me the Lord from the day I was born. And gave me this opportunity to enjoy his love just because I was born in their home. And they brought me up with just a focus on Sai, and that everything else was just very trivial compared to this. And I was fortunate for that, though I didn't realize it then. In fact, to tell you an incident that happened with my mother and me, and I'm sure many young girls will relate to this. Every week we used to go to Vrindavan. And the roses I used to take from my garden, Swami would always come to me and take it from me. One day, I didn't want to go because I wanted to attend a music concert in Bangalore. So I said, I don't want to come to see Swami today. And my mother said, well, you haven't come for the past 3 days and Swami has been asking for you. And every day he comes to me and says, where is Geeta? So if you don't come today, it is a Saturday, he will really ask, especially since you don't have school or college, so you should come. So I told my mother, you know, every weekend this is the only thing you want to do. I don't want to come. See, Swami was so easily available, taking for granted. So I said, I see Swami every day, but M.S. Subbalakshmi comes only once in 2 years. And there is a concert of M.S. Subbalakshmi and I want to attend the concert. I'm not going to come. My mother was very upset with me. She said, no, you have to come. If you want to go to the concert, after you come back, you go and attend the concert a little late, but you have to come. So very angrily, you know, with no love in my heart, I must say, I went to the garden and started to cut the roses because it was a habit with me to take roses for Swami. So I took it anyway, whether I did it with love or not. I went and cut all these roses and came and dumped it on the dining table and went to get ready. And my mother put it together in a nice bouquet for me. And when I came back, I looked at it and I said, oh, this bouquet looks terrible. I don't want to give it. You give it if you want. And my mother said, you know, why are you acting like a small child? You know, you put it together any way you want to. I just did it because I thought we'll get late. So I took it apart and put it back together again. It didn't look any different. But this was my argument with my mother. Everything she did that day was not the right thing. So I put it together just because I wanted to be mean to her for forcing me to go. I put it together and we went to Vrindavan and we sat there. And I went there walking very nicely with these roses. And a few people there said, Geeta, can we sit beside you? You know, Swami always comes near you when you have the roses. Don't ever do that. You're setting yourself up. So I said, sure, sure. Come along, have a seat. I was so sure that he's going to come for my roses. So come sit beside me, sit behind me, everything. And we all sat there and Swami came out for darshan. And Swami can do this so beautifully. He walked in front of me. He looked at everybody on the other side, made a big U around me and walked away and completely ignored me so beautifully. And these poor people who sat next to me were like, oh goodness, I was sitting there and he went there now all because of you, you know. We lost our chance, we're sitting next to you. And here I am sitting with my big bouquet of roses and Swami has walked away. And I'm still quite self-confident. And he'll come, you know. He'll finish those rounds and he'll come. So he finished and he's coming back and I'm all set again with my roses, ready to hand it to him. Like always did. Cape made a bigger U around me. And now at this point, I'm totally embarrassed. I'm sitting there with my roses in front of me. Everyone is looking at me and they all know there is something wrong because he usually came to me and took the roses. At that moment, you want to disappear with the roses and everything underground somewhere. And not so much, I must be honest with you, because Swami didn't come to me. It was more my ego because everyone was looking at me. And I was embarrassed about it. And here I had bragged to all these people besides me to sit down with me. And I am just completely embarrassed. And then he starts to walk away very slowly towards the gate. And at that point, I suddenly start thinking, what am I so embarrassed about? I'm losing his darshan. I'm losing his loving gesture. He comes and takes these. And I'm worried about all these people. And immediately, what did I do? Why did he do that? And of course, the answer came in 1 second. I have been so rude to my mother who has given me this body, who has shown him to me, who has given me everything that I have in my life. How can the cosmic mother look at me? He cannot. I have hurt my mother. So I just sit there and I say, I'm so sorry, Swami. I'm so sorry. I will not speak to her like this. At least in the afternoon, you should look at me. You shouldn't ignore me like this. And he's walking away. And that loving, forgiving Swami, he just stopped at the gate. Turned around, came all the way back to the darshan line. Comes to me, took the roses, said, aren't the roses beautiful? I said, yes, Swami, I had tears in my eyes. And he says, but learn to speak fragrantly in the language of roses. It is not enough to offer him those flowers if you cannot speak like those flowers. If you cannot be beautiful and give joy to others like those flowers too. what is the point in offering it to him? It just becomes a picture, just a very robotic, habitual gesture. So those were the lessons I've learnt, and I hope I have learnt them. I'm sure my mother may or may not disagree with me, but I have tried as much as I can as I got older, and of course now that I'm a mother myself, to appreciate what our parents do for us. And these are some of, I feel for me, have been tremendous lessons that I have learnt. That we have to, when we live our everyday life, we have to remember that Swami is with us all the time. All the time.